Trade tensions continue to rise between India and China. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Delivery giants FedEx and DHL have reportedly temporarily suspended import shipments between India and China, sparking concerns a recent border conflict between the two nations could trigger major global supply chain disruptions. From Mumbai, the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar explains that already this has resulted in shortages of key consumer goods and raw materials in local markets.
They've been forced to do this simply because customs officials here in India across ports and airports are not clearing consignments that are coming in from China. And this has been happening since the 15th of June when there was a military escalation in the Galwan Valley in Ladakh that led to 20 Indian deaths. It's in some sense a reflection of the deteriorating trade relationship between the two countries.
This could have big supply chain consequences on both sides, especially for some of India's biggest industries like the pharmaceuticals industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a couple of days ago, I was speaking to the head of the Pharma Export Promotion Council of India. They told me that no pharmaceutical materials, raw materials or active pharmaceutical ingredients or medical devices were being cleared since June 15th. And this is worrying because India imports nearly 70% of its pharma raw material needs from China and is also a major exporter of finished generic drugs to global markets. It has as much as 30% of market share in countries like the US, so there could be potential impact of this on both local and global drug supply chains.
Has there been any movement from either the Chinese or Indian governments on this issue?
There hasn't. Over the past 3-4 weeks, there's been a growing sort of rallying cry here in India for a boycott of Chinese goods. We also saw just a couple of days ago that the Indian government banned 59 apps, including the likes of TikTok. This is unlikely to resolve anytime soon.
The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar in Mumbai. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
A quick check of financial markets. Global shares are solidly higher across Europe and Asia this morning. Positive developments around coronavirus vaccine trials are keeping investors optimistic the economic damage from the pandemic can be contained. U.S. stock futures are heading up between 0.5% and 0.8% ahead of the closely watched June jobs report. It's out a day early to account for the July 4th holiday. Economists expect the U.S. economy to have added 3 million new jobs last month as some states began to reopen shops and restaurants. Well, more than 1,000 fast food delivery workers have staged a protest in Brazil's largest city, Sao Paulo. They paraded on their motorcycles throughout main streets of the city and blocked roads for many hours. They say they're under huge pressure from food delivery apps, which have seen demand rise sharply since coronavirus lockdown measures went into place. The BBC's Leonardo Roca has more on that story.
Motorbike riders say companies require them to be available to work every day of the week and say they are unable to take breaks while on shift.
The app companies don't have any commitments, social or labor. The workers are at the mercy of their own luck.
It's really serious. It's got to the point where we've had to do this. It's got to that point where you can't provide. You work and can't pay for the gas.
A spokesman for the industry said all drivers are freelancers who have flexibility to manage their hours. He said that many of their demands had already been met.
The BBC's Leonardo Rocco there. Over the last couple of years, central bankers around the world have expressed concern about increasing political pressure from their nation's governments. Today, Ukraine's central bank governor, Yakov Shmoly, called it quits, saying systemic political pressure is making it impossible to carry out his duties. Tim Ash, an economist at Blue Bay Asset Management, explains what pushed Mr. Shmoly to resign and what it means for the nation's economic recovery efforts from the coronavirus pandemic.
It's been a very long-winded amount of pressure on the central bank and efforts by this governor and the former governor Gonchareva to push through a radical banking sector clear-up and a macro stabilization program. Old oligarchic interests in Ukraine have hated that. And at every step, they've tried to undermine the national bank in that process. So this is really a culmination of that process.
And President Vladimir Zelensky was seen as a reformer. Now he's basically accused of meddling in the central bank's affairs. What does this mean for his leadership?
Well, he came in, I think people gave him the benefit of the doubt. He had a very strong mandate, a popular mandate. He got a big majority in parliament. And he indicated that the population wanted reform. They wanted corruption to be fought. They wanted the country to be cleaned up. And, you know, he gave lip service to that initially. He hired some reformers. Subsequently, they've been reshuffled out. And the cabinet now is a very different complexion to what it did a year ago. And on the National Bank, he didn't set the scene particularly very well at the start by meeting key oligarchs, particularly Kolomoisky, who ran, you know, the biggest bank, Privat Bank, that was subsequently nationalised. So that sent a very bad message, I think. But since then, he's tried to suggest that, you know, under pressure from the IMF to be more independent, more supportive of the National Bank. But the reality is, I think the National Bank has not really felt his support. The management of the National Bank of Ukraine has been under extreme pressure. They've had death threats. A former governor had a house burnt down, a car burnt down. And unfortunately, you know, the president, for whatever reason, has not provided sufficient assurance to them that they're safe. And I think Shmoly's resignation is really another reflection of that.
And this also comes at a tough moment for Ukraine. It recently agreed a $5 billion bailout from the IMF. What does this changeover mean for the future of that?
Well, it's got to be in doubt. I mean, you could argue that, you know, pressure increased on Shmoly after they got the IMF money because they had the money in the bank. But I think there is still a couple of billion dollars still to be released from that program. There's about it. You could double that in terms of World Bank EU money that's also linked to the IMF program. You know, it's very hard to see that being dispersed now this year unless we see a capable person appointed to head the National Bank.
Tim Ash, economist at Blue Bay Asset Management. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.